A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome everybody to All Net, the Irish Examiner basketball podcast. This is episode number 3. I'm your host, Conor Meaney, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kieran Shannon. Kieran, you're very welcome.
Likewise, Conor, and very welcome, I suppose, to your new arrival. We were talking last week with Mark Kavanagh, who was going to be in the maternity ward, and you were there this week yourself, and good news.
Yeah, look, appreciate it. Baby number 3 has arrived. We have a baby girl now, Florence, which is very exciting.
You weren't thinking of calling her Marion, or is there enough Marion in your life?
No, Dad went to school in Marion College, worked his whole life in Marion College, and married a Marion, set up a Marion basketball club, so can't steal his thunder on that one. So, it's cool, it's exciting. It's the first free agent we've had. So the two boys were born into Marion Club, they've already been signed up, but now we have to figure out whether we have to restart the Marion female section or not, and we have to figure that out over the next year.
Are the two boys hooping already?
No, not at all. One of those ones that look, whatever they pick up will be great. They do a bit of Arthur, our oldest, is down in Clontarf, GAA. Asher, we'll see where they go, but it's good, it's exciting, and all healthy, and everything you could ask for in the lead up to Christmas.
And yet you were able to fit in. Look, you took in some of the games last weekend. You still turned out the column. And just tell us what struck you last week. Like, we were talking on the ladies' front, I suppose. We were talking last week to Hannah Thornton. She was looking forward to going to Cork. It didn't work out for her. That was the big one. What struck you about watching that one?
Yeah, Glenmire came out with a big win down Neptune Stadium. There's, I guess, two things. One, from just the pure basketball side of things, Glenmire were very impressive. They've got a lot of momentum at the moment, and they're playing against the best defense in the league, but still found a way to score. And their American has been excellent all season, leading the league in scoring. And DCU did a good job of limiting her to only 15 points. But when you have Irish players who can score, it makes such a huge difference. And you saw the likes of Anya McKenna, Claire O'Sullivan, Mia Furlong, all kind of contribute, and no matter how good a defense is, they're not going to be able to take away everything from you. They can only kind of take away certain things. So I think that variety of offense was really the difference between the two teams. And Glenmire looked like they're really rounding into serious form now, that they could be the team to watch in the league. So it was very impressive. I just said on the basketball side of things, the one negative of it is that, like, we talked about it being such a huge game and everything else, and it didn't have the crowd and the platform that it probably deserved. And that's not to fault any of the clubs or anything else, but it's just, I think, as the league and everything else needs to do a better job of, when we have these marquee matchups, to really milk them for all their worth.
How could that happen?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Maybe it's setting out these kind of key matches. Like, even if you take the NBA, they have the Christmas Day games and everything else, where they kind of they set out in the calendar when there's marquee matchups. And not that they all have to be on the same date or anything else, but if the likes of DCU and Glenmire are playing, that we know every year is a big game, that there really needs to be, whether it's additional support or whatever it might be, to try and help them and really give it the platform that it deserves. Because, like, our top players, some of these girls have just played in the arena in front of a capacity crowd in an international game, and then for like 2 weeks later to be playing in front of probably less than 200 people is just something that I think they deserve more. And just, I think we probably need to put our thinking caps on collectively of how we support that a little bit more.
I suppose, even though it's in Cork and there's no Cork team in the women's cup semi-finals, we will have meteors. DCU will be a big matchup for one, and you would hope there'd be a good crowd there. It'd probably be on the same bill as Emporium Cork, Ballincollig, their semi-final. Like, Meteors are obviously the team that took out Glenmire in the cup. you were impressed by them again at the weekend as well.
Yeah, no, look, they played Ulster again after playing them in the cup the previous week, and they had too much for them. The scary of Meteors is that they don't require Claire Melia to score all the time, that she can facilitate it and then pick her at times when she's going to attack a little bit more. So they're looking very good. It's rounding into, like, we're getting close to the halfway point in both the leagues, and I think it's in the Women's League it's getting quite clear that we probably have Meteors and Glanmire who are in the driving seat for the race for the league. And then you now have like DCU have moved down to 3 losses, which kind of takes them that little bit below. And then Wildcats also, we kind of identified the game last week as a potential difficult one, given that they had to go to Liffey Celtics the week before in the cup, and they had to go back down again, or back up to Kildare for the second week in a row, and they lost there. So it was a very impressive performance by Liffey. So it's starting to get a little bit clearer where the hierarchy is, and there's still a lot to happen. And even going into this weekend coming, we have Glanmire have to go and play against Wildcats. So like by Christmas time, I think we're going to have a really clear picture of where that race is going.
And then, look, in the men's, we were talking last week about the fallout in Neptune being out of the league. They had come off a couple of defeats in the league. You would have thought the Sligo game was the ideal opportunity to get back on the horse, but they were knocked off it again. Great win for Sligo, who, it has to be acknowledged, like, for their first time being back in the Super League, you know, in the century. Like, but for, again, what struck you about, what do you think is the ramification there? Like, we made the point last week that there's different formats, that while I suppose the Women's League is first past the post, the traditional league, the men's is in a playoff format, so Neptune have some scope. But we talked about the importance of them needing to hold it together in the wake of losing to the cup. But here they are after a defeat. They have another home game. What's your own take on where they're at and where Sligo are at?
I'll start with Sligo. Sligo were really, really impressive. I saw them. I've seen them a couple of times. They shoot the ball really well. They brought in a number of players, but then they also had homegrown players who played. Oisin O'Reilly, Cian Lally played well. I thought they did a really good job of just attacking off the dribble and then moving the ball well and shooting. And they've been a high scoring team so far this year. This is the first time they won where they hadn't scored over 90 points. Now they got to 87. But they show great composure even when Neptune were coming back at them. And I guess a measure of the fact that they have a couple of imports is that they're probably not a traditional kind of first time in the league in a long, long time kind of club, where they have guys who kind of have this expectation that they're at this platform, rather than guys who are trying to figure out what it's like to play in the Super League. So they've done a good job, especially coming off. I took umbrage with it that Shane O'Mara called it an embarrassing loss to UCD the previous game. But they did have a loss against, like, we're obviously one of the weaker teams in the country at the moment. And they had lost there. So for them to bounce back and go on the road down to Neptune and win was impressive. For Neptune, it's more the same kind of issues. Like, there isn't a magic fix. There's... like, again, we've talked about the American, Jordan Evans. He had 2 points at the weekend, which just isn't going to be good enough. And then the other part of it is that they struggled containing off the dribble a lot. Mark Reynolds, when he's on the pod, I highlighted that as an issue, and we saw more of that again. So the positive for Neptune was, like, I was watching the way the stream is, the camera was just over the corner of their team bench, so you end up watching a lot of the bench reactions and the different things, just to see how guys are kind of watching it all. And they were up on their feet for, like, a lot of different plays, trying to encourage people. Like, there was a lot of they were showing the hunger and the care for it to be there. It's just the discipline to do the things that were necessary just weren't there. And I don't think, as I said, I think I wrote about it, like, it's not panic stations. The nature of the playoffs with four teams in each conference going through, like, Neptune are going to be in the playoffs. I don't think they're gonna fall out of it that far. But at the same time, the chasing pack are all won at the weekend. So you have, like, you've Killorglin and Tralee, who are currently sitting outside the playoffs, both won. And the Killorglin team's a very solid team. They have a number of good pros. And Tralee, we already know their pedigree. So it's not panic stations, but at the same time, it's I think this Christmas period is going to be really important for them, that they get a win against Mike Cullen next weekend is the plan, and then try and reset over Christmas so that, and with no cup distraction in January, that they can try and start building back up so that kind of February, March, they're kind of have a renewed vigour to them.
Well, a team, I suppose, with a similar profile to both Sligo and Neptune would be Blue Demons, UCC Blue Demons, who would have come back up from the First Division up to the Super League. And they've made a change and adjustment with their American, who we can talk about a bit more. We're delighted to be joined by Daniel O'Mahony. Danny, good to see you, Danny. Welcome to the podcast.
Likewise. And look, just first, I want to start by saying well done to both of you. It's a great podcast. Enjoy watching it every week. And furthermore, Connor, congratulations on the birth of your baby daughter over the last couple of days. So,
cheers.
Congratulations.
Danny, I didn't get talking to you. I was down for the Neptune A&A game. You arrived with a child in your own. You were carrying there with Jody, I could see. And you were also, look, the last time I was talking to you was just before you, the eve of the league, right?
Yeah, correct.
And you were talking about the adjustment even in pre-season, you know, a couple of the games that you pointed out, particularly I think one against Tralee at the start. You're 9-10 games in now. And look, while this is the air altitude that Demons are historically used to, what has the adjustment been like operating at these heights?
Look, I think we spoke about it in pre-season, the adjustment in terms of how quick teams can put points up in you. I think I spoke about pre-season, we were down to play Tralee, and I was like, oh, the game's going fine, we're grand. And next, within two or three possessions, we had turnovers. I think Jack O'Boyle said three threes, and what was a 3 or 4 point game was in a 14-point game, you know. And also, I think I spoke as well about just the number of players included on a scouting report. Whereas last year, you know, in Division 1, you had, let's say, Limerick Celtics had Wofford averaging 40-something. Limerick Eagles had Manny Payton averaging 40-something. So when you went into these games, it was very much, let's stop the marquee player and, you know, hopefully the rest of the results should take care of itself. Whereas definitely in Super League level, you know, even at the weekend there, we played against Temple Oak, and as much as we thought we'd stop some marquee players, like Luke Thompson absolutely didn't miss a shot, had 25 points, and not that he wasn't on the scouting report, but, you know, we were particularly concentrating on some of the other guys over him, you know, and I think that's just the difference, that every team has definitely got kind of 7 or 8 players that are capable of scoring 20 points on any given night, you know.
And go ahead, Connor.
No, it's Danny, obviously, you've also brought in a new American leading into that, just that Temple Oak game. You I was talking to you beforehand, you're excited about him beforehand, and he seems to have delivered. First week he had 33 points, and not only that, I think he maybe even frees up Kyle a little bit more to be even more aggressive. They kind of complement each other nicely. Just talk about kind of why, first of all, you had to change, and then second of all, like, what you're expecting out of MJ.
Yeah, I suppose, look, obviously when we started off, everyone during the summer is recruiting and nobody's really sharing or talking about who they're looking at or what they're doing until, you know, the news unfolds 2 or 3 weeks till the season's out, and you see through different clubs' social media that X team signed this player and that player, and, you know, and then before you know it, the games are competitive, you play against them. Look, so Jeremiah was, you know, delivering on the court, he was doing everything we've asked, he was, you know, averaging, I think, just under 20 points a game. Could have been slightly a bit more aggressive in terms of the number of shots he was taking. He had a tough start to the season. Obviously, Neptune away, Ballincollig at home, 2 derby games. And then it went into kind of game 3 where he picked it up. He had a good performance down in Tralee. He had a very, very good performance. He had 33 points against Mary, who at the time were undefeated. So everything was going, you know, well, and he was really kind of, I suppose, coming into the league himself. Unfortunately, then against Killorgan, he pulled up late in the game and he tore his kind of quad. So we got him assessed and it was a grade one tear. I was told he'd be out for kind of 2 to 3 weeks. With the kind of the cup weekend being one weekend, we knew the free weekend. It was like, okay, we got Sligo, we have Mike Cullen, he's a weekend break, and then we should have him back for Temple Oak. Obviously, we were fortunate. We lost the first game to Sligo by 3 points without him. And then during that game, we picked up another one or two injuries. So we went into the Mike Cullen game, kind of, I suppose, four guys down, nearly missing 60, 70 points from the average scorers. And then we lost to the Mike Cullen game. So then at that stage, it was kind of like, okay, we're down four games down the league. The last two, potentially, we could have possibly won had we had, you know, a couple of more guys or some of the stronger players, things like that. Then we got Jeremiah assessed again and physio came back and was kind of saying, look, it's looking, it could be another 2 to 3 weeks. So then kind of myself and the club had to make a decision, you know, like, you know, anyone who's missing 5 or 6 games in this league, that's nearly, you know, 33% of the league campaign. So all we had to do was kind of, I suppose, back to the drawing board. At this stage, and it was a different recruitment process because we knew what the league had to offer. And we knew that, you know, the likes of, you know, John Jean up in UCD Marion was probably one of the prolific scorers. Then you had Dawson up in Ballincollig, you know, a lot of, I think within the top eight scorers or the top 10 were all kind of within the guard position. And we were relying heavily on kind of, I suppose, Kyle was matching up to them. They were matching up to Kyle. And at times we lacked that bit of creativity. We obviously have like Kingsley and Tal on the inside. But we were going to at times struggle to get them the ball when, you know, when Kyle was being picked up by some of the Americans within the league. So we said, look, what we do is we'd bring in someone who, you know, I suppose could play the point, could help us to create. And look, MJ kind of fit that profile.
It's like, Daniel, it's obviously you're steeped in the history of Blue Demons, you know, your family are steeped in it. And just interesting just how, like, so you're very familiar of the great history of particularly your own club. And I've always found it fascinating. Let's say, like, it's just how the sport has evolved. But like, you would have historically had the best Americans were not in the backcourt. You know, I remember at the turn of the century picking the top 30 Americans ever to come here.
Yeah.
And I think there was only two guards, right? And Blue Demons in particular, all their best Americans would have been playing the 3, 4, 5. That's obviously changed the way basketball has changed. But how has it changed? Like, now that, like, I remember actually at that cusp, I remember Demons had a lovely little player, Toby Carberry, if you remember him.
Yeah.
But again, would have the time been, I wouldn't have picked him, would have been the consensus by people that, you know, you had great guards like Shane was coming on stream at the time, etc. But like, what is it now? Because if you look at it, like, you take even Tralee, the league they won with Calixte, who was a huge player last year. And as you said, the top scorers at the moment in the country are Americans who are playing the one or two. Why is it? How has that evolved? Why is it that now you're looking for a guard and that's where the best Americans tend to be recruited for?
I think we're kind of changing in terms of even the way the offense is going. A lot of teams are generally kind of playing with like a bit of an open post. They're liking to use kind of a pick and roll offense, spread the floor. A lot of the Irish guys are kind of more confident shooting the basketball now. So, like, you look at Tralee last year, obviously they had like Nico and Calixte, obviously kind of run the pick and roll. The other three guys were spotting up and, you know, they ended up winning the league and the cup. When we were recruiting at the start, we were kind of looking at the Super League and obviously Neptune and Tralee last year with, in my opinion, like, you had Neil Sabata and then Nico Rosa from Tralee. So obviously we went with a big in Kingsley, our big player from, he's from Manchester. And then kind of obviously we recruited away, and when we look now and with Jeremiah's injury, it was like, all right, we need to get Kingsley more involved in the offense. So rather than putting everything kind of on Kyle, let's try and bring in a bit of support function for Kyle, but also somebody who can do a bit more creation and get Kingsley more involved. And that was mainly it, you know. It's kind of keeping up, I suppose, with what everybody else is doing, just to make you're not shorthanded against anybody.
I think just one of the things that's happened, Karen, in the last few years is that you're seeing a lot of European fives come into the league who are fairly solid, who are able to kind of defend the basket, set big screens. That may not be the most polished offensive players. And like Mario Markovic, who played for us for a few years, was like that. Tralee had a few different guys like that as well. So because that necessity isn't there anymore, then having the idea of having someone who's able to create a lot off the dribble and open everything up for everybody else is a big thing. So it's definitely the way the league has gone, and it's the slight concern at a wider Irish basketball level is that when you get to the top level, our top guards don't have to create that much. So it's kind of reducing the amount that we have to develop our top point guards. Because if you ask me who's able to run a pick and roll in the Irish Super League and be very like good at it, you have a very short list of Irish players who you kind of put on that list. You'd be kind of talking Kyle, you'd be talking Paul Dick. You wouldn't be talking a huge amount of other guys who are that comfortable at having to do it. So that's why a lot of teams are bringing in Americans to do it. And it's one of those things that I'm sure it's going to evolve over the next few years, where we have to get good Irish guards doing a lot of that work again so that we develop those, because we may not have that many 6'10" guys, but we can certainly bring in guards. And it's just how we develop them.
But Daniel, like you obviously came through part of Demons having great underage teams. You were there on squads that won, you know, throughout obviously the Shane Collin generation, if we were to say it. Then obviously after Collin goes, there's a dip for a few years, you know, then you drop out of league, and then you go back into the first division. You came back. Look, you spent quite a bit of time in Dublin. What was the Blue Demons you came back to when you came back to Cork? Where did you find the club was at?
I suppose, like, even from my time living in Dublin, I was, I suppose, the ultimate fan. If Demons were playing over in UCD, I was over there grinding early, you know, got a good seat, made sure I was one of the only Demons fans amongst all the UCD fans, likewise up in Clester, you know. And that was it. And I suppose then it was always kind of like, oh, when I go back, I'll be able to go to as many home games as the road games. And then I suppose the summer then, when I was making the move back, obviously that's when the news broke. The Demons weren't going to be in the league. So being honest, I didn't really know too much kind of what to expect. I didn't really know too much about the underage structure at the time, because as I said, while in Dublin, I'd only kind of seen the Super League as they were, you know, coming to play in the Dublin, against the Dublin teams. And obviously, look, after kind of a couple of short weeks back, and I spoke with the club, and, you know, I was like, look, I kind of want to get back involved and all that. And then the opportunity came to take the under 20 team. Look, it was never to me as a just an under 20 level. We got in straight away, and you kind of groups of guys, you know, obviously, look, Dave Lehan was an under 18 international at the time. Jack O'Leary was on the under 16 Irish team at the time. So we had a couple of guys who were kind of in amongst Irish teams, you know, close to Irish teams, different things like that. So we had a good core from like under 18, under 20 that potentially, you know, in 4 or 5 years' time, there could be a real good Super League or National League team here. So that was always kind of the expectations. And, you know, that was always the way we prepared. We never kind of prepared, or we never hung our hat on winning the under 20 Cork Championship against a local league team. You know, it was always like, we were always talking about national success, and we were always kind of like, always wanted to achieve more, really, you know.
The game changer was Kyle coming back. You were pivotal in that. Like, he had obviously gone over to Neptune to play at the highest level. So he, even touching on what Connor was talking about earlier, and but you know, he dropped down a division to come back to Demons. What was that recruitment like? You know, persuasion, salesman. What was that like? Because that's what it hinged on.
Yeah, no, look, everyone always, I suppose, that's a popular question, always thinks, like, you know, like, how did you do it and things like that. But look, for anyone, I suppose, who knows me and Kyle, look, we are, I suppose, outside of basketball, we're best friends. He stood for me as my best man at my wedding, and I was standing for him in August next year for his wedding. So the conversation was it was a friendly conversation, you know. I told him, obviously, that, look, I was going forward to coach Demons in the National League. I said I wanted him to be part of that. I spoke, obviously, about, like, even from those years, me living in Dublin, Kyle's legacy as a Demons player, the Irish senior captain, all he'd achieved with Demons. I felt like, look, this, like, the way he went out was, I suppose, in his prime, Demons dropped out of the league, and obviously Kyle had, you know, had to obviously go play elsewhere. Whereas we spoke about, like, what this could mean for his legacy, for what he has won, and then to come back to be, I suppose, kind of the driving force, the main player to get Demons back into the Super League. And that was basically it, really, you know. And I think Kyle wanted that, like, wanted that legacy, you know.
How do you find coaching him, in the sense that, so I've played alongside Kyle, Like, Kyle's one of those teammates you absolutely want to have beside you. He's brilliant. He also probably plays emotionally at times, in a good way, some of the time, in a bad way some of the time. So how do you toe that line of that kind of, obviously you're very close, and it's kind of, you have that different dynamic when you two are there when it's game time.
Yeah, look, I suppose, like, when I always sat out, like, I even sat in with the team, because we had a mix of, like, so I suppose, like, Carlton, Kyle, kind of Ryan Murphy, I suppose they call him the Endless Statesman, the guys who are kind of 30 plus, or Ryan is close to 30, and then the rest of the team were all, like, 20, 21. Do you know, like, I always kind of had said to, I suppose, Kyle and Cuff, in terms of, I will take your feedback on board 100%. You know, at the end of the day, both of you guys have played at a high level for a number of time. In particular, obviously, Kyle with the Irish team and things like that. But what we need to make sure is, just amongst the rest of the group, that they all know, I suppose, who the coach is, you know? So at times, like, me and the guys would have had debriefs after trainings or after games. I always taken the feedback on board and things like that. So it was very open communication, I suppose. Me going in, the coach demons, I wanted the best. So I wasn't going to go in with the mentality of, this is my way and we're doing it my way, you know? I was very much open to change, to improve my own coaching skills, to learn from, I suppose, again, as you mentioned, having a player like Kyle on the team, you know? So I suppose that we opened that form of communication, it worked well. Obviously, look, there was times where he thought one thing and I thought another thing, you know? And we always kind of, look, we went with whatever, and look, so far, so good anyway, you know?
I know this sounds a basic question, but, like, I remember, you know, talking to Mickey, you know, when Demons had opted out of the league, you know, 93 to 98, came back, and he talked about the importance of it for younger players. And I suppose you would have been off that, who he would have had in mind. Now that Demons is back, what is the importance of Demons being back in the Super League now that you are back? What has it changed about the club?
Look, it definitely brought a massive buzz back in the club, in terms of even the fans back, and, you know, getting fans back in the games. We've very good under 20 team as well now. We're in the last four under 20 National Cup. So I suppose a couple of years ago, my Demons, without, you know, they weren't at the top level under 20, under 18. So there was nobody really coming through. Where now we're looking at, like, we were, you know, Demons lost to UCD Marion last year in the under 20 cup final. This year, and they're in the last four for the under 20 cup final, and a lot of the guys coming back. We have a young Super League team, so there's a lot of hunger there, because you have a lot of guys who are only new on the team, who are obviously, you know, fighting for their own minutes and things like that. You have guys that are coming to the games, watching the trainings, wanting to play at this level next year, you know. So it's as it was, I suppose, when I was growing up, because I remember, you know, coming out of minor level and the likes of Shane Call and all them were playing Super League, and, you know, to be called or to be asked to fall in with the Super League team on a given night when maybe they were short bodies and things like that, it was great that, you know, geez, I got to train with these guys tonight. And that's the way it is as well. We have so many young fellas. If I was to send out a text and say, you know, to like Darren Cuff there now, or, you know, any of the young guys, to say, oh, we're short there, do you mind falling in? Like, you know, the answer would always be 100% yes. And the guys, they just want to play basketball, you know?
It just, Danny, I guess when you can, look, you're an interesting one, because you probably finished playing at the top level earlier than probably you would have expected, and it's one that you, I'm not sure if that was because of limited opportunities, as that Demons team were really successful, and it's hard to keep kind of that slug going when you're not getting rewarded with opportunities in that same space. And just over the next couple of years with you kind of on the sideline now, if Demons follow the trajectory that you're hoping, and Demons get back up to competing for kind of league and cup titles, how do you keep the modern day Danny O'Mahony kind of interested in staying involved, and so that these young lads don't just see that there's an opportunity to eventually get to Super League, but that they're actually part of it, so that in the next couple of years, like, I think a lot of Super League teams is that old guys win trophies, and when the old guys are doing it, that it's almost forgotten about for a little while, the underage players, and then it's almost cyclical where you have to restart like you guys are doing. So how, over the next couple of years, are you going to be able to keep progressing towards the end goal, but then also keeping kind of the approach that you have at the moment?
I suppose it's easier played out on paper as it is coaching on the sideline. And always kind of when you mark out these things, you try and find the right balance of, you know, the experienced players with the young players. You know, like I'm always, like we always go quite deep into our lineups on any given day. You know, we don't kind of run with five and six players multiple times. There's always 10, 11 players that are get an opportunity to play. You know, obviously, like Kyle, Carlton, Diesel is okay. Obviously, there's not a whole lot of years left in them, as much as I'd love them guys to keep going. But what we try to do is ensure that the younger guys, like obviously at the moment, you've like James Hannigan has kind of been on the starting five for majority of time. Dave Lehan is playing some big minutes. That what you want is you want the guys who are 21, 22 to play in big minutes at this age, so that basically kind of when if there was someone, a slot open up on team and someone moves on, it's not a case of, okay, well, who's going to be this role model now? The fact that, you know, there's a void in the team. So what we expect then is that the new guys come in, the 18, 19-year-olds break into the team and they take the roles that were formerly played by like James Hannigan, Scott Hannigan, Dave Lehan, you know. I suppose it's really just identifying multiple roles in the team, you know.
You were thrown in right away, right in. First league game, Neptune. Yeah. First cup game, Neptune. The local derby element. I mean, first of all, because we're about to talk about another local derby this weekend, just on those, was there a moment in it you were saying, yeah, this is what it's about? Even though you were on the run side, two close games, and you were reared on that rivalry, like, and so was your wife, right? What from the other side, what was it like being on the sideline in those two games? And did you have that moment like, yeah, this is what it's about?
No, look, definitely. I think you said it there, was having that moment, because even though last year, obviously, doing National League and it was the top, I was managing Demons National League team, the top team, you know, obviously, there was times when we started off the league campaign due to COVID restrictions, playing behind closed doors, 50 people in the gym, including both teams. So, like, we were down the Maryland Green September, October last year with next to nobody in the crowd, you know. And then as it went on, obviously, we played some games. And because we were successful, sometimes people weren't turning up to the games because, should Demons have played this team, they're definitely going to win. You know, and it was that, whereas the Neptune game, definitely when you walked in, even the hype coming up to it that was done, I suppose, through social media and local media and stuff. When we got to it, definitely, I think when, you know, as the teams went in the dressing room, as they were being called out, you know, obviously the noise, everything, there was an element of, all right, this is what it's all about. Like, you know, this is it. This is the Super League, you know.
So now you're into Ballincollig, and I suppose in the years that Demons were out of the league, they came in into the Super League, obviously led a lot of the way last year, where you could argue done by the format. They did all the heavy lifting, the front running. They're interesting because there's obviously huge links and with you know the playing personnel, particularly with, let's say, the O'Sullivans having played with Demons. I suppose they were traditionally a sort of feeder club to Demons before they actually decided, why don't we become our own? They've staked out that claim themselves. I mean, what is this relationship stroke rivalry like? It's a different dynamic, obviously, to Neptune, which is historical, Northside v Northside. What is the Ballincollig Demons dynamic like?
Yeah, you're right. Maybe it is the Northside that keeps the Demons, and I suppose even just the longevity, talk about, you know, the early 80s, you know, of Demons and Neptune, and maybe it's just that's what it is. Look, Ballincollig, it's still a rivalry. And obviously the second game of the season, I think it was a case of first game of the season, we played Neptune, a sold out Neptune Stadium, had the rivalry feel, everything. The following week we played a home game to Maryland Arena. It didn't have the atmosphere, didn't have maybe even the game. Obviously Ballincollig came out well on top that day, whereas the week prior it was a single basket which decided it. Look, we will be treating it just as kind of any other game. The guys know, obviously, look, some of the local guys growing up, they would have played against Ballincollig. Some of them would have been, you know, have lost out to Ballincollig in different games growing up. The second game of the season, obviously, when they beat us, you know, like for us, it's kind of like, right, grand, we can't afford to kind of drop any more ones. We're kind of playing a bit of catch up now after losing the two games to Sligo and Mike Cullen. So going into this game now, like, you know, we're kind of, I suppose, all guns blazing to try and come out with a result.
And just on that, Danny, so we're going to finish up shortly here, but we're at the halfway point. It's kind of I think it's fair to say that no team has really stood out as like someone has to figure out a way to beat them.
Yeah.
There's lots of teams. There's probably 6-7 teams who think they have a very good chance of winning the league this year. So what do you think? What are you looking out for kind of early over the next couple of weeks that's going to kind of separate out those teams, and what do you think that people should be really paying attention to as we figure out who's going to eventually get their hands on the trophy?
I suppose, as I said, it's the chase and pack, you know, like, as in we're looking there at the moment. Obviously, we're in a playoff position at the moment, kind of sitting in fourth, but the teams below us are winning. I've been now kind of looking at the fixtures over the next couple of weeks, and I'm seeing, okay, look, I see Tralee should win that game. I see Killarney should win that game. So kind of putting that bit of pressure on yourself that, okay, if we don't win these games, you know, then we could become the chasing pack. I think it's, look, as now we're all going to be playing each other a second time, and then obviously with the coverage on basketball or on TV, it's quite easy to scout teams. So teams are becoming more, like, teams know each other's personnel more. They're looking who's doing the scoring. They're looking at the defenses, the offenses. So coaches are now really able to kind of, I suppose, analyse what other teams are doing. And I think we come down to that as well. Sometimes who's done the homework better than the other team and different things like that, you know?
Okay, brilliant. Well, look, Danny, it's fantastic to have Demons back in the league. I think it's one of the clubs that it's important to have them in the league. The league gets lesser when they're not there. So fair play to you for all the work that you've done to get them to this point. And look, you're obviously there in with a shout. So we'll be keeping a key eye on you over the next few weeks. And best of luck with the rest of the season.
All right, perfect, guys. Thanks very much. Okay.
So, Danny. So we're there, Connor. I suppose Demons is a club that, you know, has been around the league for a while there's a return for them into the big time, the Super League. Then, I suppose we've been primarily looking at the Super League, but we also have very competitive first divisions in both men's and women's, and fascinating in their own right, particularly because of the geographical spread. And just when we were talking beforehand, one that's just a phenomenon, and we're going to delve into it now, Cavan. So we're delighted to be joined by Carol.
Hi, Carol. Hi, Connor.
Very nice to meet you. Carol, look, I'll be honest, I suppose I'm a geographic historian of the sport. And just looking at, we wouldn't have traditionally, I suppose, non-Belfast Ulster being competitive. You know, there was Cookstown would have been competitive in the late 80s, underage men's, and in the 90s, I suppose we've had National League teams now in Donegal recently, but there's a lot of spots where it just has been an oasis. There's been virtually no basketball, wastelands. Cavan traditionally has been that, but you went up, you set up this club 10 years ago, and now you're the assistant coach to a team that are top of the first division in your first year there. So A, congratulations, and B, how did you do it?
Good question. We're still trying to answer that ourselves.
Are you operating out of the town of Cavan?
Out of Virginia. We're East Cavan Eagles, but there's other clubs in the area as well. It's a massive geographical area. Like, we play games in Monaghan, we play in Meath, Cavan, and we've got us down as far as Street and Longford.
See, it's Carol Verschoyle for anyone who doesn't know. So, Carol, you and your family have been involved in basketball for a long time. You've got two boys who, one is playing Super League at the moment for Vincent's Jake, and Dara also played kind of for Thunder and for Denny Notre Dame for a number of years.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in basketball, and kind of what made you suddenly the Pied Piper of basketball up in Virginia for the East Cavan Eagles?
Well, obviously we're not originally from Cavan, we're from Dublin. So I would have played basketball. My whole family played. My brothers, my sister played. We all played. I would have been involved with Crusaders basketball up in Dublin with Deborah McCargill. And from there, that's when I really got into the coaching end of it. Dara is, I'd be afraid to even say how many years he's playing, but and still playing. So I would have coached him at underage. Then Jake came along. The strangest part of that is he'd no interest in basketball at all. And it's amazing that it became his main sport, and he's playing Super League now. And he played in Cavan. That's where the Cavan, we were living in Cavan, and he played for East Cavan Eagles. He was the first, you know, that was that first under 12 boys team that we had. with the local leagues here at the time, if you wanted to progress, you really needed to move out of the area, unfortunately. And that's what he did. So he ended up going up to Dublin, back up to Vincent's, where Dara had been a long old trek every Saturday and Sunday morning.
So you'd be both commuting, bringing Jake to Dublin, right? And then staying and coaching in Virginia with the club, right?
Yep.
So God, it was full on for you. But I suppose part of the motivation would it have been that you would build up enough of a talent base? Like even here, I'm living in and coaching in Clare, Carol, and I suppose the natural gravitational pull for players who are just a little bit beyond is to gravitate possibly towards Limerick. And I suppose one of the challenges will be that you'd be looking for a pathway that more of them remain possibly in a Clare, the way you have created a cavern. So, but that's hard to do, but you've been able to do it. Like we were talking about the under 12s. How did you create nearly a critical mass that you're now able to create a national league team?
It was, to be honest with you, it was full on. There were four of us, myself, my husband and Laura and Porrick McAvoy. We set the club up and we set it up with just the four of us. So all four of us were out every night of the week coaching, and every weekend then it was just games from early Saturday morning, and you fell home on Sunday evening having coached nonstop. You could have five games in a day. And then it just went from there. We got, you know, as you realised, we need more people involved here. We have to get help. And we got help in, and the community has been fantastic in their support.
Traditionally, Cavan would be, like, obviously it's legendary, you know, historically for how good it was at Gaelic football, you know, particularly in the 30s and 40s, but obviously they won again in 2020. But like, how receptive did you find Cavan towards basketball and like getting you, like you were steeped in it, you said, but there's people who you did get help from that probably knew very little, that the first experience they had to basketball was because their kids were willing to try it out. So,
To be honest with you, we did. We brought a lot to the area. Danny there, who you were talking to, he came up with Potentials and ran camps, Ken Black's camps. We brought them. Thunder came up. That's how our association with Dave is there. And they introduced, I suppose, a higher level of basketball. They played some exhibition games for us up in the college. And it kind of got people interested. We got busloads of kids and we brought them to games up in Dublin over the years, bringing them to Super League games, showing them really what it was like, you know. You're always, I think once you're in a rural area, you're going to compete with, you know, the same pool of children play all the sports. So you'll have a guy and he'll be playing Gaelic, he'll be playing soccer, he'll be playing the basketball, playing the rugby, and you're trying to fit it all in and, you know, work your schedules around, oh, well, there's a cup game this weekend, we can't have this game, we can't have that game. Sure, you know, you're talking to the Gaelic coach to try and organise when you're going to have, you know, set a particular match so that it isn't clashing with something else. And it's not easy, but you have to find a way around it.
And Carol, I remember talking to Dara Gaffney. So Dara would have been involved with Marion for a few years. Yeah. And he was kind of up that neck of the woods. A couple of years ago, he was kind of talking about this idea that a National League team was potentially coming. When did the idea that you would actually go to National League ever kind of come about? Or was it always on the radar for you that you'd love to get
it
to this
stage? It
would
always have been an ambition. Yeah, it was always there that we wanted to do it. Unfortunately, again, it's a rural phenomenon. When they get to a certain age, they're looking to go to college, you know, move abroad for work, even up to, you know, it could be over to Galway, down to Cork, up to back to Dublin for work. So you lose your pool of players. So we kind of said, how are we going to put how are we going to stop it, or what's going to encourage people to stay? And when at the local level, like our ladies team last year. And no disrespect to the local league, we had some good games, but they went unbeaten all season, the ladies team. So you have to create a challenge. You have to put something there that's to give people a focus on what you're going to work towards. So the ambition was always there for National League. We did look at it last year, but we kind of had to take a step back and you know, just to say, no, we're not ready for this. We haven't we haven't got our homework done, and we have to put it, you know, put a stop to it and get ourselves organized and go for it again, which is what we did this year. We've really been lucky, I suppose, in that in the pool of players we have. Like we have there's five of the ladies who've actually at some time in their basketball career have played on international teams.
Are they all homegrown or did
all
you...
homegrown? Now we are we're young, but you know that's five homegrown players.
You're obviously coaching them very well, if you can say so yourself. What have you found is the key? You've been coaching, you know.
Well, I would have coached most of them at some point throughout their years playing underage. We've other players, other coaches in the club, like as Conor mentioned there, Dara Gaffney. We have other coaches. I think that the coaching clinics have been a huge benefit because it brought other players in that, you know, to give people something to aspire to. The coaches themselves were fantastic, and they've, you know, been kind of there as a resource all the time for us. Obviously the girls gone off on their international level have you know brought back a certain level of expertise that we wouldn't have had before. The boys side of it, we've had international players in the boys as well, so there's always the level has always been quite high, but as I say, it's just you tend to lose them once they turn 18 because they're going to college, they're going somewhere else. So now we've people traveling back to Cavan to
right
train.
That's part of what you did it, you know, to retention or to make an attraction. But by the same token, when you do that for the players, it means an awful lot of work at committee level. I mean, you tell me what it's been, what goes with being a national lead.
To be honest, we have an army of helpers. That's the only way I can put it. The committee are excellent. There's a group of people there, and behind the scene work is just, it's phenomenal. The amount of time they put in. We've in the show centre there now, which is new to us, but a setup for a National League game. There's an army of chairs brought in from the school. They're all set up. The court is swept. The doors are manned. The hospitality is there for the visiting teams. It's just, and that all has to be put back away at the end of the game as well.
Think,
so it's a huge effort goes into it.
Carol, I think... So people who aren't familiar with when we say the show center, just the scale of what has been achieved up there is it's one of the, like, I have to say, from my time within Basketball Ireland, it's definitely one of the most progressive clubs in terms of what they're trying to do. But then also the way they went about actually trying to achieve what they've done in the show center is unbelievable. So for people who don't know, the show center is kind of a multi-purpose event center that's not used for the majority of the year. It's and it was available to East Cavan Eagles. And one of the key things that enabled the development to happen was that we're talking about the kind of downsides of kind of trying to develop a club within rural Ireland. But the other side of that is that leader funding through the EU is for kind of developing rural areas. And one of the things that it allowed was the floor and different things were brought in, Carol, isn't that right? And I think people should go on to Basketball Ireland TV, those who have access to it, and just see the setup, because it's as good a setup as you're going to find. It's better than the majority of Super League teams. It is something to kind of behold.
What you'd really like to see is that area before the floor goes in. The floor is a removable floor. The show center is actually an agricultural show center. So 2 weeks before our first National League game was the Virginia show set, which is one of the biggest agricultural shows in the country. Like there were cows and sheep on exhibition in that hall prior to that. Again, an army of people came in to put the floor down. It takes a huge amount of work. It's, as I say, it's removable. We had to get the rings in. We had hoped to get, you know, just the portable ones that you could roll out, but the floor just it wasn't suitable. So we ended up having to get rings custom made that would come down from the ceiling. And I know there's plenty of places have rings that come down from the ceiling, but with the shutters to allow the cattle in and out, you couldn't just have normal rings that would come down. So there was a whole set of problems evolved around that, that had to be solved. Yeah, it's just, it's incredible. And the facilities are excellent. We can get so many people.
There's the people in both helping out with the club, but then there's people going along. Are there people going along to watch now? Like,
we're packed out.
Is that right? Like, I mean,
yeah,
there is a buzz around. Has it got into an early the Cavan public consciousness where it's crossed over the way that, you know, if you're in Tralee now, you know that there's a game going down in the complex, yeah. Or like the Cavan public have nearly got into this. It's not just members.
Yeah. I mean, we are East Cavan Eagles as a club. The national ladies team is McAvoy's Cavan Eagles, and the support is phenomenal. The people coming to actually attend the games, we're practically full house every game. And our sponsors have been fantastic. We've several sponsors on board now, and it just wouldn't be possible without them, to be honest with you. It's fantastic, the level of support that we're getting.
One thing being in the league, but your performance, so like you're top in the league at the moment. What has that? Have you surprised yourselves how well you've done in your first season?
I think, to be honest, we did recruit well. We have Dave Baker as our head coach. And Dave would have done, you know, camps, as I said before, with Thunder up in the clubs. And that's how our association with Dave goes back many, many years. So I contacted him to ask, because obviously he has connections with, you know, recruitment. That's his forte. And just in talking to him and as we were going along, it just became a little bit of a no-brainer, you know, to get him on board. He was interested and excited to come on board with us. So he has a host of experience, and he's brought an energy and an expertise that we wouldn't have necessarily have had without it. So that has helped.
When you're talking about recruiting, are you talking about players from Irish players from other parts?
We have two American players that we brought in, and we have one girl from Spain. And then the rest are all homegrown, are all, bar one, have all played all their basketball with the club.
Okay.
One girl came from Dunchoclin, but other than that, everybody has come up through the ranks.
And Carol, just that first game of the season was a home game against Carlo. Just
that's right, yeah.
For yourself and the McAvoys, was it a little bit of a kind of staring around in this beautiful kind of setup, National League, all this kind of happening that in such a short space of time, where you could you believe it, or can you believe it, or
yeah,
has it kind of settled
it's
in
it's hard to, it is hard to believe. It definitely is. It's great to see it, you know, the support that's there, the amount of people that are on board now and are you know, involved in helping and making it all happen. It's just incredible. To see the girls, like some of them would have coached from under 12, and you're looking at them now and they're on the court and senior ladies, National League. It's great. Yeah.
Like sometimes you would have seen and coached those girls their first layup.
Yeah.
You know, something they couldn't do, and you saw it. I know you're seeing them doing it at the National League level.
For sure. Yeah. I won't mention names now, but there was one girl under 12, and you know, at that age, run up and down, up and down, up and down, and the ball just would not go in the net. No matter what she did, she wasn't scoring a basket. And I remember her dad saying to me, "Oh my God, is she ever going to be able to score?" And I said, "You know, don't worry, it'll come. It will come. The game will come where the layup will drop. And, you know, that's from there on. She'll be, and there she is, starting five on the National League ladies team."
That's brilliant, Karen. Look, it's a fantastic story, a fantastic achievement. You know, very well done, because
thank you very much.
That's what we want, the growth of the sport throughout the country. You know, it's called a National League, and you're definitely helping that. And, you know, being a good Dublin basketball person, you're spreading the word. And congratulations to all of you there, and the very best of luck. And thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thanks, Connor.
It's a great story, isn't it? Like, even just and someone like Carol, who there's like even in non-National League clubs, just the clubs in rural Ireland outside of, you know, it's often one or two people who are driving the whole thing. Like, she's talking there about every day they were out coaching, and but they're getting the rewards. It's lovely to see. You would you've known Carol much before?
No, not at all. So I know of the family. So Dara's a couple of years older than me, and Jake, I know a little bit. I've played against him once or twice, and I keep a close eye on Vincent's because Yasko coached us last year, and I know Yasko had coached with Carol and had coached Jake underage, so I keep a close eye on them. But it's absolutely brilliant to see, and I think we're starting to see a spread around the country that we haven't seen before. And I think even myself, lazily, I would have just said, one of the reasons for the growth of it has been just like, oh, there's immigration into different parts of the country and there's a natural interest in basketball that's kind of grown up. But it does such a disservice to the people like Carol who have actually gone out and really made a tangible impact in their community and have grown the game. The idea that there's something there that they and even travel back to up to Cavan to play in the National League is really interesting, really exciting. And as I said, the way they've gone about it of getting the foundation of the club really strong so that they, I read a thing before the first game of the season where they're saying they don't want this to be a kind of a flash in the pan kind of, let's see what this is like. They have the structures there. They've built it up from scratch, and it's something that a lot of clubs could really look at. And the leader part of it and the funding is a route that I think in Irish basketball we've been really poor at finding routes to funding in the past. So there's potentially other clubs who could learn from them. So no, it's a really interesting story. And as you said, they're top of their conference in the Women's National League. They got knocked out by in the cup on a buzzer beater in Portlaoise. So kind of a tough lesson there, but it'll be fascinating to see how they get on the second half of the season.
Exactly. So that's it for this week's podcast, everybody. Connor, you have to go back to, are you changing nappies yet? Are you?
Modern man, you know, do all, do it all.
All right, brilliant. Well, all the best in that, and all the best to the teams that are out. And look, we'll be back this time next week. Thank you all for joining us on the Examiner All Net Basketball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.